The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
And a good morning for hour number two on this Wednesday, the 26th day of May, 2021. We're going to hop on to some calls on some stuff that we dredged up, topically speaking, in hour number one, 866-660-5759. We're also going to check in at a couple of layers of legislature today in this hour at 8:35. We're going to say hi to Congressman Roger Williams and see what's going on congressionally this week. And right now we are headed to Austin. It's State Senator Kelly Hancock joining us for a little Texas legislature update on what was a news-making evening. Kelly, welcome, sir. How you doing?
Good morning, Mark. Good to hear you.
Nice to have you. All right, what was the deal with the midnight deadline last night? Everybody hunkered down waiting for to see what would survive the midnight deadline and what would not. There's some things that a lot of people wanted that did not survive the deadline. We'll talk about what that means. But what was the deadline last night and what did it mean?
Well, the deadline last night was the last day to hear Senate bills over in the House. And that, you know, that's kind of In Austin, and especially in the Capitol, it's grab your popcorn night. So everybody knows it's going to be a late night. There's going to be a lot of activity. There's going to be a lot of gamesmanship being played. And it's always the most interesting night of the entire session, Mark.
So how did we get there's some important stuff that did not survive it.
Right.
Let's talk about whether it's dead. The first thing that jumps out to me is the one that would have protected our girls from competition from boys in school sports. That didn't make the deadline, did it?
It did not, Mark. And, you know, and it's not going away. I mean, that is an issue that's continued to pop up. And, you know, we saw it up in our area, Mark, a couple of years ago when we had, you know, a female wrestling state champion that was able to wrestle with the advantage in my, you know, in my district, that was able to wrestle with the advantage of steroids where nobody else can do the steroids simply because she was transitioning and she took the state championship clearly with the advantages of steroids for transitioning that were prescribed by the doctor. So they worked around the UIL rules to get that. And it started there and, you know, nobody paid much attention to it, but you know, this is just now starting and it's not, it's just going to get worse.
Okay. I mean, you're right. So what kept this from happening? What, you know, we run everything. It's a Republican state,
right?
Republican Senate, Republican House. How in the world did this not see the light of day by midnight last night?
Well, it was on the calendar. It was late in the calendar, and so early in the day, literally what's happened, Mark, over the and since I've left the House, you know, I served 6 years in the House, is the Democrat Party has continued to elect more and more progressives that are far left, that weren't that are different than the majority of the Democrats I served with in the House. And there is this faction that has created this LGBTQ caucus. And in the House, even though there's 150 members, there's the ability for 7-8 members, which is what we kind of saw yesterday. Once the calendar is set and once that deadline is set, that you know, they can control the timing. And they began to offer multiple amendments. Some of them were the same amendments. And they began what we called chubbing, delaying tactics, very early in the day in order to try to avoid SB 29, which would have prohibited males from competing in female sports.
This is what drives people insane. You know,
it drives a lot of us.
I know we run.
Mark, it's not going away.
Damn.
I mean, you can delay this, but this is not going away.
What, and it
is
so 2 years for until you guys gather back in Austin in the next odd-numbered year? We got to live with a dude in the lane of the track meet next to my daughter?
Well, the good news in Texas is UIL can address this issue until we legislatively put it in statute. And so, you know, there needs to be enormous pressure on UIL to do the right thing. I mean, what we saw in the NCAA is they stand it tall, you know, on the wrong side of this until they caved completely. Mm-hmm. And the reality is the vast majority of Americans, and specifically Texans, have a huge problem with this issue. And we're going to have to address it legislatively. I don't like pushing things down the road that you know aren't going away. And this is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And worse than that, you know, as someone who has 2-3-month-old granddaughters, I question whether I even want them competing in sports, because are they going to get hurt?
Yeah, or have their efforts turn to dust, just to turn to irrelevancy because there's someone born male, you know, running against them. Well, hopefully next time somebody tees this up, we Republicans who supposedly run everything, and listen, obviously the minority party gets to do some things. I'm not a fan of the tyranny of the majority, but this is something the state wants. It's something every Republican wants that I can find. I think it was ridiculous we couldn't get this done.
No, I agree, Mark, and we've got to get it done. I mean, this, you know, when we talk about them, we think at the state level, but you and I know, I mean, every high school has, you know, high school records that were set.
Yep.
And so, I mean, this, we may not see this at a state level for a while, but a local level, there's a potential of taking some female's name off the wall.
Of course. Yeah, you don't have to convince me. Yeah, that's just hacking me off even more that we couldn't do it. All right, was there anything else that I know, in fact, that we just spent a lot of our first hour talking about this notion of, you know, sort of pulling a DeSantis here, and I know Abbott lives to be praised as much as DeSantis, and I love Governor Abbott, and I love DeSantis, but this whole social media deplatforming thing I think is stone cold unconstitutional. That one did not survive either, correct? Or it just didn't make the midnight deadline.
Right. And Mark, you know, just because we passed them something doesn't mean it's constitutional, which means it goes to court. And
yep.
And so, you know, that's which tends to happen. Sometimes you pass something that doesn't hold up in court. But I mean, I would say one thing that did pass that I carried it for 2 years in the House, and I carried this my third session, and we don't pay attention to it, but was a big, big deal, is spending limit passed last night. The House put it on a major state.
Mm-hmm.
It's carried by Appropriations Chair Dr. Greg Bonin. I've carried that now 10 years trying to get a new spending limit that's tighter, because when Republicans aren't in charge, a spending limit is going to be very important. We see that at the federal level, certainly, and puts population inflation in statute. And that bill, after today in third reading, will be going to the governor.
State Senator Kelly Hancock is with us. Let's talk about a couple of things that people have brought me on the show during some pretty fascinating guest segments. Of course, Abbott faces the challenge from your former colleague, Don Huffines, in the state Senate. There are a couple of things Don wants to do, want to run them by you. Get rid of the property tax. And I ask him, okay, and replace it with what? He talks about spending limits, which you just talked about. And then there are other ideas floating around about a possibility of a sales tax. Doesn't sound like that's something that he favors. It sounds like a lot of it is sort of spending cut related. What is your thought on the ability to significantly decrease or even get rid of our pernicious property taxes?
Well, and you know, as you know, I was very involved in SB2 and HB3, which at least we kind of put a ceiling on that and stopped the out of control property taxing that was taking place. You know, Mark, that is a form of income for the state and local governments in Texas. Everybody's talked about it. Nobody's come up, and even, you know, Senator Huffman's when he was here, nobody's come up with a plan to do it, because if you're going to raise sales tax, you're going to have to get a lot of, you know, that's going to change a lot of the things that are eliminated from being taxed right now. You're going to have to tax them. And the reality is, with our health care costs continuing to grow, Medicaid continues to grow more and more, you know, faster than anything else, and education spending, that's over 80% of our budget. So, you know, at least I think Senator Huffines or, you know, Don recognized when he was here that it's limited what you can cut, And so he recognizes maybe that you've got to replace that revenue. He just doesn't have any idea on how to do it.
And you know, it's a long campaign. We got a primary coming in March of next year, and everybody's got plenty of time to figure that out. The other thing that he offered us is the notion that with a Democrat president, we're not going to have a whole lot of busy wall building. So maybe, doggone it, state of Texas builds its own wall. I asked both guys interested in being attorney general, Ken Paxton being reelected, and George P., who may challenge him, can we do that? They both kind of indicated we could. What's your thought on it?
Well, Mark, unfortunately and I can't tell you the number of years now in the budget. I mean, we have at the state level spent, and in this budget, we have $800 million in border security, which is asinine. The fact that the state of Texas is having to spend of our money that could go to education, go to healthcare costs. You know, Texans are spending $800 million for the failure of our federal government.
Yep.
Now, I will tell you, significant improvement along the border with President Trump and the building of the wall. And just the positions he was taking, that changed immediately when Biden got in office. Mm-hmm. And it is a nightmare down there. And that is why we continue to fund this at that level, so that we put our resources, our manpower on the border that could be deployed throughout the state because the federal government won't step up.
I know you've touched on something so important here, because when the idea arises, and I can see it resonating to a certain degree, there's a kind of a Texan spirit that says, if Washington won't do it, doggone it, we will. Yeah, Texas wall. But then as soon as you think about doing that, the very next thing that occurs to me is, wait a minute, A, how much is that going to be? And B, how insane is it that we should have to do that? We're doing Washington's job and denying our citizens some level of spending that we might need to, heaven forbid, fix a road somewhere. So I don't know. Well, listen, 60 seconds. What's left? What have I not asked you about? What should we look for in the remaining dwindling days of the 2021 legislative session?
Well, it'll be finalizing things. The Senate has till midnight tonight to pass several of the House bills. I mean, a couple of things that we have passed, Mark, is the pandemic liability has passed. That's going there. Heartbeat, bill that and the Roe versus Wade trigger has gone. Banning critical race, which, you know, I represent Southlake. Huge deal for all of our school districts across Texas.
And please tell everybody, please tell everybody, this is being so badly reported. In no way does this mean that teachers can't talk about slavery anymore, can't teach about Jim Crow, or can't talk about Brown v. Board of Education or desegregate. Of course they can. These are vital parts of American history, but we are not going to let them use specific critical race theory firebombs in the classroom to make kids hate our country and hate each other. It's that specific.
Mark, absolutely. I spent 30 years on, you know, the Birdville School Board. Never would I let history, and I love history. Love history. We want history to be taught. We don't want somebody's false impressions of history to be taught. We want true history to be taught. And what we've seen in this critical race theory is people from the left and from the right have debunked many of the things that are being taught. And all we want is truth and facts taught to our – and history, true history taught to our children in school. And we want it balanced. And we don't want, you know, political posturing by the left or by the right in our education establishment. That's not the place for that.
The Mid-City's own Texas Senate District 9, Kelly Hancock. Thanks so much, Kelly. We always appreciate it. Good health, good success to you. We'll check back soon.
Appreciate it, Mark. Appreciate you.
State Senator Kelly Hancock. All right, back to your calls on a variety of things next. Mark Davis, 822. New Orleans, 1983. Little Stevie Nicks. Little Stand Back on her 73rd birthday. Holy cow. 866-660-5759. Lee, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
I am great, Mark. Now I'm depressed, just like Mike, because I found out that Stevie Nicks is 73.
I know, but she looks great. Whatever she's doing, we should all be doing it. Maybe wrap ourselves in loose garments and spin around a lot.
Yeah. So, hey, going back to the conversation that we had, that you were having the first hour relative to Facebook and Twitter and mm-hmm. And I'm a big proponent for fidelity to the Constitution, and I agree with your argument that they're private companies and they get to do what they want to do. So in my head, I flipped that back to, you know, Joe Bob's barbecue in Pig's Knuckle, Iowa. And Joe Bob wants to allow his patrons to smoke cigarettes in his restaurant. The marketplace should allow, I think, should allow that. And I think the Constitution should allow that. And people that don't like smoke won't go to Joe Bob's.
But here's what's tricky. That's my perfect world solution, because I have no use for a smoking environment, but I'm also in favor of business freedom and business liberty. However, the question you have to ask, anytime a law happens in a town, is do they have the right to have that law? If a city says, we're not going to allow smoking in our restaurants, do they have the right to have that law? And the answer is, of course they do. I don't like it. It's not my preference, but of course they do. There is no right.
So if the state of Texas decides they want to have a law against Facebook and Twitter, you know, banning people for speech they don't like, shouldn't the state of Texas be allowed to have that law?
No.
Doesn't the same apply?
No, because you have free speech rights. There's a First Amendment that says you can't be compelled to put stuff up on a platform that you don't want to put up there any more than you can be compelled to broadcast something you don't want or compelled to print something you don't want. There's a First Amendment issue in the social media thing.
Unfortunately, that's why we have lawyers.
Yes. But the good news is you don't have to be one to figure it out. Just hang with me and I'll help you. Thank you, man. Appreciate it very, very much. 8:30, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Into the newsroom we go. Here's Gordon Griffin. Hey, it's Mark Davis. Springtime means spring cleaning time. And you know, there's some people who do spring cleaning throughout the house and they don't do the carpets. Ugh. You know what kind of gunk is saved up in those carpets? The rest of your house can be gleaming clean, but if you've still got nasty carpets, that is not right. Not a clean home. So let's get you cleaned up. Zero res, three rooms, cleaned $99. What a special. 20% off tile cleaning, too, if you do that. Three rooms for $99. And air ducts. We'll do air ducts to make allergies better, make dust better. That's going at $350 per AC unit. That's 10% off. And they're just wonderful people, and they do upholstery and all kinds of other things around the house. So just call them and let them go nuts. Get your house clean. Let's go. 214-37-CLEAN, 214-37-CLEAN, or ZeroResDallas.com, ZeroResDallas.com. But you bet they're booking out of Fort Worth and serving the entire Metroplex. It's the best kind of clean, and I love these guys. Zero Res, 214-37-CLEAN, or ZeroResDallas.com, ZeroResDallas.com. Dallas.com. Very sweet mixture of musical birthdays today. Just did some Stevie Nicks. She's 73. Did some Hank Jr. He's 72. Here's young whippersnapper Lenny Kravitz clocking in at 57 today. A little Let Love Rule. All righty. So taking a look at various rules and laws and such at the state level there with State Senator Kelly Hancock, let us move to the world of Washington under the Capitol Dome. 25th District Congressman Roger Williams with our look at federal matters that are hanging from the rafters. Roger, welcome. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, Mark. Good morning to you.
Very nice to have you. Let me check in first thing on the status of COVID relief. We got a lot of states, ours included, saying, essentially turning to Washington and saying, stop it with the COVID relief. Nobody wants a job anymore. Where does that stand, and how much longer does that will the COVID spigot be open from Washington?
Well, the COVID spigot needs to shut down, and the fact that they're paying this extra $300, I'm glad to see the states pushing back on it, because what it's done, it's created a zero job market. I mean, people like myself that employ people, we're actually paying people to not go to work. We're telling a group of people now that unemployment has become a career. And, you know, under President Trump, we had more jobs than people. And because they were working, now we can't hire people because they're getting paid to sit at home. So this needs to end. We need to get back to capitalistic behavior, competition, and let free markets work.
What are some of the other things, you know, that are going on? Obviously, we hear the various battles and quotes and tweets and this and that. But legislatively, what's on the conveyor belt, and what are you guys actually getting together and talking about these days?
Well, we getting together doesn't happen that much. We're not too much of a bipartisan group right now, but we've got to get infrastructure done. I mean, everybody's been reading about that, and there should be one thing, Mark, that is bipartisan, should be infrastructure. The problem is this administration has just put a number out there that is so high that it's unbelievable. We don't need anything like that to fix roads, bridges, and et cetera. But they have so many other things in there that have nothing to do with infrastructure, like, you know, environmental justice, what the heck is that, child care, et cetera. So we need to get down to a plan that will focus on infrastructure, ports and highways, et cetera, and get the private sector involved. We've got to get the private sector involved to get this done. And the more the private sector is involved, the less the taxpayers are involved. So they're going to see a plan of about $1 trillion here proposed next day or two. We'll see what the what the Democrats have to say about that.
We just had the vote on this January 6th commission. Look, who doesn't know what happened? It was a horribly unfortunate element. It was an unfortunate part of an honorable and principled day as people gathered under President Trump's direction and moved peacefully at his direction down to the Capitol in order to say, you know what, we've had so many misgivings and so many rules just dashed against the rocks. Speaking of COVID, that was largely the reason offered as to why, that maybe these electoral votes shouldn't be so automatically accepted because there were so many glitches and so many sacrifices of law and rules changed on the fly. Commission seems dead. That thing's not going to make it through the Senate, is it?
No, it's not. We don't need another commission. I mean, we've got agencies already, but there's 400 people have already been indicted by the FBI on this thing. This is just another political ploy to talk about President Trump. He's not our president any longer. We need to move forward. And there's no end game to this thing, Mark. I mean, what's the end game? I mean, it never stops. So I voted against it. It's the right vote, and it will go nowhere in the Senate. We need to move on and get ready for 2022.
Now, there are some folks, many of them I like a lot, hint, hint, who said, hey, maybe this is a good idea because we can get some answers to some questions about the Capitol Police and Nancy Pelosi and what did they know and when did they know it. Listen, the fair questions, that's great. But what's a way to get the answers to those questions without handing over a huge club to the Democrats to bludgeon us with for half a year?
Well, I think you let law enforcement work. That's what we have law enforcement for, is to see what caused it, who was involved, how can we make sure it doesn't happen again. Like you say, nobody agrees with that kind of behavior. But the fact of the matter is, it's already being looked at. We've got law enforcement needs to do their job, and let's move on and away from a commission that people will be tired of hearing about. It's just another beat down on President Trump and Republicans. So, like I said, I voted against it. It was the right vote. 2022 is ahead of us. We need to focus on that.
Congressman Roger Williams is with us. And if we go back about 4 years, we were just days before the congressional baseball shooting. And then the game actually happened because it was just a wonderful moment of healing, of figuratively and literally, as Steve Scalise got to be there having taken a bullet, et cetera, et cetera. Then we had the game in 18. We had the game in 19. No congressional baseball game in 2020. You were there for the shooting. This is very, very important to you and sustain an injury at that time. Will there be a congressional baseball game this year?
There will. It's going to be September 29th. Republicans were already working out, and look at it, you know, everybody kind of, it's a great thing. It's been played 110 years. It is bipartisan. It brings people together for about an hour and a half without trying to verbally maul each other. But so we got the game, and people are already excited about it. And so it's fun to get up every morning, play a little baseball, and then dive into the swamp.
That's exactly right. If there's gets us together for a couple of hours. So that date again is September 29th, did you say?
September 29th in that stadium. And, you know, we'll probably have another 30,000 people there that'll be cheering their favorite player and their favorite team on, as it should be, as we attempt to get back to normal again in this great country.
Well, and let's use that to wrap it up. I mean, you're obviously, you know, splitting time between being in Washington and being back here in Texas in the 25th District. What's your thought on, you know, you have a busy life, a lot of appointments, a lot of things, a lot of people in your life. And as we sort of see fewer and fewer masks and we start to relax a little bit and hopefully the vaccines are, you know, spreading out and, you know, creating additional safety and security. What's your thought on Texas and in America and up there in Washington? On the sort of the season of reopening and a slow march back to normalcy?
Well, we are getting back to normal. We're starting to see people without masks and see what they actually look like. This is a good thing. It seems like the mask thing is still what we do in Washington. I mean, you know, Pelosi's making us wear masks as we vote and this sort of thing. But America is coming back. America is the greatest country in the world because it's resilient. It can come back from bad things. Businesses, if the Biden administration will let business work, the economy will stay strong. So this is a good time to come back. This is the year of comeback. I couldn't be more excited the way people got a little hop in their little step right now. People are basically happy, but the masks need to go. Kids need to get back in school. People need to go to ball games. People need to enjoy their families and enjoy this great country as it's supposed to be.
Congressman Roger Williams, Texas 25th District, williams.house.gov, for the congressional website and on Twitter at Rep, as in Representative, Rep R. Williams. Roger, thanks as always. Appreciate it. Stay safe, and we'll talk soon, I know.
God bless. Thank you.
God bless. Congressman Roger Williams. Already 845-866-660-5759. Let's hop back. Some folks have been waiting on the phones. We are in Dallas. Jeff, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Hey, Mark. Love your program.
Love you back.
I'm out feeding the chickens in East Texas right now.
Excellent.
I listen to your show out
there.
I love
it.
And last time I was on the radio was 1993 with John Rohde. He was promoting an ISP I started up.
All right. We're going to do some nostalgia. 93, was he doing middays on Cliff at the time?
Yeah, that's right. He was doing it out of the ballpark.
Because when I came back to my native Texas in the spring of 1994, it was a pretty rich talk show landscape. And I think Norm Hitzkus was doing the all sports morning show on Cliff. And then Kevin McCarthy came on right after him. And then John Rohde was doing middays. And Rohde had been part of that wonderful Rohde and LaBella, the late, great John LaBella.
That's right.
And then after Rohde was the iconic, wonderful, and I'm still in touch with him on Facebook, the incomparable David Gold. I mean, that was a fine station and quite a competitor at the time.
And John promoted my ISP, and we grew it, you know, pretty big. But I used to get beat up about the whole – you know, I deleted a lot of the news groups, which were kind of controversial at the time. And at that time, I had to worry about being litigated against because I would be a publisher. And so Section 230 came along and saved a lot of those sorts of things. But I think there's a way to redefine the argument right now by looking at it, because really what we want to encourage is the competition and the innovation.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to do that is to kind of get away from trying to define, you know, is Facebook and Twitter, are they a publisher, are they a utility, are they a platform? Well, they're acting like a monopoly. And so the trick from that point, my idea is, and I've been on a lot of telecommunication standards committees over the last 30 years, mm-hmm. and that's to do open platform interfaces. And so it's all about access and portability. And one of the things that we did recently, everybody can move their telephone number now because they own it, right? Between carriers. That was never the possibility. And that was one of the ways that carriers really forced people to stay on their network. And then if you go back 70 years, you go back to the old Tushaphone, 1956, you may heard about it, but basically there was a company that had a cup that was put over a phone. And AT&T at the time was two monopolies. One was the monopoly of utility. But the other monopoly was the fact that was the only way you could get hardware to connect to the network.
Right.
And Hushaphone had this little plastic cup that went over the phone to be able to prevent other people from listening to your conversation. AT&T sued them after they had that device for 20 years selling it. And so my point is that I think that every time I try to interface and try to build an internet company that takes information from a big provider like Facebook or Twitter, mm-hmm. they squish me like a bug because they don't provide the interfaces
exactly.
to the information.
Exactly.
Right? So if we had open source and open defined standards for transportable information, like healthcare, I was a chief technology officer of a healthcare company recently, and Epic is like the dominant provider of the platform. Well, if Epic said, nope, sorry, can't move your health information, well, I went to the doctor yesterday, and I was able to basically take the information from my provider in Dallas and move it to East Texas. Why can't we do that with
Facebook? How might this, because what everybody's thinking, what I'm trying to get people to do is stop this instinct of constitutional violations of telling Facebook and Twitter what they can do since we're private companies and making it easier for competitors to set up an alternative. How would this, what was the term, open platform interface, how would that facilitate that?
you basically would provide standards that people would own their information. In fact, you could do it on the blockchain so that I could prevent anybody else from getting at my information. And I own my information just like healthcare information, mm-hmm. and basically require Facebook and Twitter to provide web services interfaces so that I can get at my information and I can move it to another provider if I don't like the way that they're treating me. And now the network becomes a lot like the internet, you know, was originally, where a lot of information, and it still is in most cases, moves between different providers. Imagine if we didn't have things like PDF, you know, where somebody actually, you know, prevented you from moving your information because, right. you know, it was on their platform. But if we encouraged open standards, I think that a lot of competition innovation would come away our way.
Man, Jeff, thank you enormously with the broad expertise you have and the stuff. I appreciate it, because all I'm looking for here is ways to allow this competition to happen so that we don't wind up walking around looking like we're in some tantrum trying to shut down, you know, big bad companies that don't do things that that we like. We are in Dallas. James, welcome. Happy Wednesday. How are you?
I'm well, sir.
Hey, nice to have you.
I wanted to ask you, Mr. Davis, I have a tenant in one of my rental houses.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there 16 months. The rent is $1,600 a month. He now owes me over $25,000.
Oh.
It normally takes about 15, 18 days to evict somebody.
Right.
But he's been there 16 months, and I cannot get the County of Dallas to send the constable out to my property and set him out.
Is it because of this horrible COVID year? Is it just, are we just, has COVID made it harder to, you know, evict people who have not been paying rent?
Extremely harder, but most of those issues have left at the end of December 31. Now, I feel that the county and the people in charge are trying to push everything back, do not evict anybody until President Biden can instill his new program, which he's working on right now, to extend non-evictions for a longer period of time.
Right. Okay. Wow. All right. Let's unpack. James, thank you. I think you may have started a talk show topic. We all understand what a nightmare millions of people have been through. Inability to buy food, inability to pay rent, loss of jobs, loss of livelihoods. That's what COVID did to millions, to countless people. And we have empathy, we understand, and that we ought to have some ability. I'm sure even as a landlord, you'd have been willing to play ball with somebody for X number of months, but not 16, where it's now cost you $25,000. Without violating any, you know, privacy or names or anything, does your tenant have a job?
Well, no need to, I presume, but he does have extremely nice big parties every weekend.
Yes. So he has beer money, just not rent money. Oh, so many of these things are matters of priority. All right, so you have called the usual pipelines. Somebody's not paying rent, you know, and you don't want to evict anybody. That's not your favorite thing. You've tried to call them, and the answer has been, we're just not going to do it, or we can't do it.
Well, to me, it sounds strange, but true. We'll get back to you Friday.
Yeah, right.
Well, there's been a lot of Fridays.
It's been a lot of months. 25 grand. James, of course, I feel for somebody whose life was rocked by COVID. I feel for those people. But where's the empathy and sympathy been for you? Maybe this is your retirement. This 25 grand that you don't have. Listen, I'm going to take this and carry it into the next hour, see what people think of it. Do me a favor. If anything changes, let me know and give me an update. I appreciate it very much. 8:53. Little Gold Dust Woman to take us out on Stevie Nicks' birthday. Little Fleetwood Mac, she is 73. Holy cow. Did she make you cry? 8:59, let's cruise into the 9 o'clock hour. Here's what our last call. This last year in a fraction has been filled with so many hearts breaking for other people. What it's like to not have a job, what it's like to not be able to afford rent, afford your mortgage, afford food. This has been the story for millions of people. So I've walked around with all this proper empathy that we should all have for people who can't pay the rent. But then I take a look up at, you know, pardon me for the go-to, villain on this, AOC, she was up there in New York talking about rent cancellation, mortgage cancellation, government essentially telling people you do not have to pay your rent, you do not have to pay your mortgage. And it's like, oh, great, there's a bonus. Like finding a lottery ticket, finding money in a pocket. But what about the people? What about the landlords who are just maybe have a rental property for their retirement? This guy's out $25,000. So what ought we to do? I'll reshape this and let me know if you've got any thoughts on it. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Is it over now? Do you know how? Pick up the pieces and go.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.